Hello and welcome to my presentation on board games of medieval Europe. When we talk about medieval times, the Middle Ages, people usually have a vague idea about when this period ended, when the Age of Discovery started. Most people don't know so much about when it started, but let's just say the Roman Empire fell apart. Okay, so when we talk about board games, I'm only going to talk about actual board games as opposed to sports or maybe hunting as other recreations, so we focus on board games only today. There once was a wise king, and he asked the question whether our fate, whether we make our own fate, or all our life is predetermined by the hand of God. And he sent out his three advisors to find the answers. The first one returned and told him, when we think and plan ahead, then we can plot a path in our life that is unaltered by any random events, just like in chess. And the second one brought him the game of dice, and he said, no matter how witty you are, if God does not favor you, your opponent will always roll the better dice and you will always lose the game. So the third one said, I take the best of both worlds. When I have bad rolls in a game, I use my wits to balance that. So the image you see here is from a book called Libro de los Luegos. It was written, or rather commissioned, by Alphonse X, King of Castile, León, Galicia, and so on and so on. I'm not sure if he's depicted here. And at one point, he almost became King of Germany. But as we all know, he didn't make it. Richard of Cornwall made the race. But if he would have succeeded, he would have been sitting in this. What's this? He would have been sitting in this throne. As avid watchers of the Game of Thrones series might know, a throne needs to be impressive. Sitting comfort is secondary. This is the German king's throne. You can see it in Aachen. And it's made of stone slabs, but not any old stone slabs. When they built it in the 9th century, they just stole some stone slabs from the Temple of Jerusalem. Can't get any holier than that. And they just nailed them together. Every German king has been crowned in this throne. And on the right side of the throne, you find this curious marking, which is actually a board game. The game of Merrill's, Mills, or Morris. It has many names, and it has been popular even before medieval times, and it's still popular today. But it's in vertical position, so it's a bit hard to play. So how did the king play this game? Did he have sticky figurines, or maybe magic powers, or little slaves holding up the game pieces? None of that. The game board simply was etched in the floor plates of the Temple of Jerusalem. So people just played the game there, and it's still on this throne today. So the game is so simple, you can play it anywhere. You just draw your board wherever you are, in the mud or in a stone or whatever. You find some pebbles, some acorns, some shards, and you start playing. This is what it looks in the Book of Alfonso. Most of the games I'm going to present today are from the Book of Alfonso el Sabio. And this here is the depiction of the Nine Man's Morris, or Merrill's, or Mills, or whatever you might call it. The game is simple. You take turns placing your pieces on the board, And when you're done placing them, you start moving them along the lines. Whenever you get three in a row, you can remove one of your opponent's pieces until they have less than three, and then you win. Now there are larger and smaller variants of this game. The smaller one you might know under the name of tic-tac-toe, or maybe, as the kids nowadays call it, match three. And the next game is also a very, very good game. You should try and play it. It's called Alkerk. Actually, Alfonso named all the games that are played online Alkerk, but the name stuck with this one. It's similar to the game of checkers, which was invented way later. I didn't find any actual reference in medieval times to the game of checkers, which is played on a chessboard. And so this is the game of Alkerk. You move your pieces one step at a time, or you jump over your opponent's pieces until they have no pieces left. That's basically the rules. And if you want to force a victory in this game, you have to add a rule that is actually not medieval. You can add something like you can only move forward, or maybe restrict repetitions or something. But other than that, that's it. It's a simple game, a very good game. You should try. Next, this is a drawing from the Runestone of Ockelbo. It depicts two people playing a board game, probably. And it's a game of the Tafel family. It's probably a game called Neffatafel. It has these markings in the corners and one in the center. And the most popular variant of Neffatafel is called Tablut. Neffatafel was played on boards all kinds of sizes all over Scandinavia. And this one, Tablut, is played on the 9x9 board. There's the white king in the center on the throne. And he tries to escape to one of the corners. And his opponent tries to hinder him and capture the king. So it's an asymmetric game. This is what's remarkable about the Tafel games. And it works like this. All the pieces can move just like the rook in chess in horizontal or vertical lines, as long as there are no obstacles. Capturing goes like this. You enclose your opponent's pieces between two of your pieces, and then you can remove it from the board. If your opponent decides to move in between your pieces, nothing happens. Capturing the king works by enclosing him from all four sides, or, as no one is allowed to step on the throne once the king has left it, you can also use the throne as the fourth piece to capture the king. So try the game of Neffatafel. Then there's a very similar game, also from the Tafel families. It's called Hallertafel, and you might know it under the name of Fox and Geese. So similar to Alkerk, the fox tries to capture all the geese by jumping over them, and the geese just try to capture the fox by enclosing him so he can't move anymore. Also an asymmetric game, Hallertafel. Okay, now for something very different and probably the most complicated game I'm going to present today. This is Rhythmomachia. So it's the war of numbers. Oh boy. Okay, let's first look at the setup. This game is based on math, actually on arithmetic, on the proportions of numbers. So we divide the base numbers that are the numbers 2 through 9 in odd and even numbers. We don't use the 1 because that's very odd. So what we see here is the base set up for the even numbers. 2, 4, 6, 8. And this is the first multiplex of numbers. A multiplex is when in a number, a number is contained multiple times. So the first line is just the base numbers, and the second line behind them is just square. So they're contained in there twice. From this, we built the super particularis. That's when the new number contains the base number and part of that number. We do that 2 times, and then we build the super partitions. That's when the new number contains the base number and multiple parts of that base number. And that's how we get to the super particularis. And there's one that's special, that's 91 in this case. That's actually also the sum of the squares 1 through 6. So 1 squared plus 2 squared plus 3 squared and so on. And they're little pieces stacked on top of each other. They form a little pyramid. So this is the base setup for even side, odd side the same. The board is 8 by 16. This game was very popular. Some people say it was even more popular than chess, not sure. It was invented around 1030 when the cathedral schools of Worms and Würzburg actually wanted to decide which school is better. So it was invented by a guy called Asilo, later improved by Hermannus Contractus, and a little more improved in the 1070s when they added color coding and so on. And here's how it works. This is how the pieces move. So the multiplex pieces, they move just one. The super particularis, they move 2 either in a straight line or at the right angle. And the super partitions may move 3 and either a straight line or a right angle. How do you capture your opponent's pieces? There are several methods. The first one called eruptio. So you measure the distance from your playing piece to the one you want to attack. You multiply the number of tiles in between by your own number. And if that matches the piece attacked, then you capture it. Congresses, if 2 pieces happen to be the same number and with a valid move, you would land on the same spot. This piece is captured. Insidia. If you place your pieces around your opponent's piece, so they sum up, in this case it's 36 plus 45 is 81, then you can capture your opponent's piece. And the last one, if your opponent's piece can't move anymore because you surround it, you also capture it. So now, there is some debate on how capturing actually works, because you can't move to the spot you just captured, and removing the piece from the board might not be as useful. So I think they just turned them around upside down and then they played for the other team. This is important because we haven't talked about the goal of the game yet, winning. In this case, Your goal is not to vanquish your opponent. No, no, no. You just go to your opponent's base, and there you build either an arithmetic or a harmonic progression of numbers. So in this case, arithmetic progression, the difference between these numbers is 2. So 5 plus 2 is 7, 7 plus 2 is 9, so this is the arithmetic progression. And the other one, the harmonic progression, the difference between 3 and 4 is 1, the difference between 4 and 6 is 2, and so on. So you build harmony in your opponent's base. What a game. And I built a replica. You can try and play it. Okay, finally, the probably most popular game of all times, chess. So this is actually not from the codex from Alfonso. This is from the Carmina Burana. But chess was just played all over the world. And yeah, we're going to talk about medieval chess. It's a little different from what we play nowadays. The setup looks very similar. If we look at the bottom line, there's the rook, a knight, the alfers, the firzan, the king, another, oh wait, no, I mix it up. It's a firzan, the alfers, the king, another firzan, a knight, and a rook. And in before them are the pawns. 8x8 board. Okay, here's how they move. The rook and the knight move just like today's chess pieces move. The rook as far as he can go, and the knight can jump over pieces. Also the pawns, they move one step at a time forward and they capture diagonally. There's the firzan. He can move two squares exactly, and he can jump just like the knight. Then the alfers. It's actually, it later became the queen, but at the time it was the alfers, which is kind of a counselor to the king or his vizier. So he could move only a little diagonally. Later that piece became just more powerful. And the alfers either stays with the king to defend him, or he can choose in the first move to jump over the pawns and lead them to battle. And the king, this is just a larger version, and he moves just like today's chess king. This is a depiction from Alfonso's book, and it's Alfonso's book contains a lot of board games, but half of the book is made up of chess puzzles called mansoubs. And what we see here is probably the most popular mansoub ever. Alfonso mentions it three times. And the story goes like this. There once was a rich sultan, and he had a beautiful wife called Dilaram. And the sultan played chess, and he gambled, and he actually gambled his wife. And he was unlucky, or maybe just a bad chess player. The situation did not look very good for him. He's playing white. Let's look at the board. This was his position. So pretty much anything his opponent does will end in a checkmate for white. But Dilaram was not only stunningly beautiful, but also very intelligent, and probably a lot better chess player than him. And she cried out to him, and she cried, sacrifice your rooks and save your wife. And this is the active part of this talk. White moves. Any suggestions? Did I lose you at Ritum War Machia? Slow down. So, okay, we start with the rook. And it's actually a rook sacrifice. King has to capture, because it's check. Now what? Okay. This is a very difficult move. Remember the firzan? He can jump. Yes, he jumps over the knight, and it's discovered check from the rook. So the king has to move again. Here, Furzan jumps. King has to move again. And next move. Oh, he was in check from the rook. It was discovered check. Okay, next move. We're almost there. Yes. Sacrifice the second. Slow down. Sacrifice another rook. And king has to capture. Now what? We're almost there. Simple, king's in the corner. Yes, we move the pawn. Check. King has the move. He has only one square where he can go because the other one is covered by the Furzan. He has to move over there again. And final move, checkmate. Knight. Checkmate. That's it. The most famous Mansub ever. And that's how he saved Dilaram. Okay. There are many variants in the Book of Alfonso. This one is the Four Seasons chess. The colors are spring, summer, fall, and winter, and it's a four-player game. This is the great chess. There are so many pieces. There are camels and crocodiles and lions and elephants. Also notice the pawns are moved a little forward, just to speed up the game, because, I mean, it's a huge game. It's going to take a long time to play. They thought of many ways to speed up games, also chess. And at one point, they came up with the idea to use dice. So whatever dice you roll determines what pieces you move. And that's where we get to the second part of this talk, about making dice. So this is an illustration about how the dice making worked back then. Now let me tell you a little story. This is how I tried to create a replica of medieval dice. You have to go to a proper slaughterhouse and ask them for a bovine femur. That's the hind leg of a cow, and it's huge. It's a huge bone. I mean, really, really huge. And if you ask them nicely, they chop it up for you in smaller, more manageable pieces. But it's still covered in sinews and stuff, so you have to cook it for hours, and your whole house smells like soup. But you end up with humongous pieces of clean white bone. You have to saw them into smaller pieces, remove all the round parts and brittle, porous parts, because you only need the straight bones. Bones are hollow, so you need the thick walls of the bone. You saw them into bars, the bars into cubes, and you end up maybe with a handful of cubes. Then you forge a little trident drill and drill the nice little holes in them with a nice ring around. Add some charcoal to a lump of beeswax to make them nice and black. And then you have dice. In this image, the last part is where the vendor sells dice to a poor guy who has lost everything. gambling, but he still gambles on. Okay, now we have dice. Let's play some games. The first one's called Riffa. Usually in medieval games, you throw two, mostly three dice at once. Maybe it's because they're maybe a little uneven, so you even the odds. Anyway, you throw three dice, and you keep throwing until you have two of a kind. Then you throw the third one, and you add all three numbers. Whoever has the higher number wins. The other one I'm going to tell you about is called Azar. You throw three dice. In the first roll, if you roll 6 or below, or 15 or above, you win. If you roll between 7 and 14 points, that's your opponent's lucky number. Now you roll again. If you roll 6 or below, or 15 or above, it's called a Reazar, and you lose. If you roll between 7 and 14, it's your own lucky number. And now you just keep rolling until either one's lucky number turns up again and this person wins. If you roll another Azar, it doesn't count. There are variants of the game, yes? Well, then you have to start over. There are variants of the game, like the raised Azar, when you, whenever you roll an Azar, you have to put more money, and that's actually the point. So if you play this game, it might be kind of boring, unless you play for money. Finally, board games that involve dice. The most famous of them all, tablas, or tables, or trick-track, or poof, or it has many names. You probably know the modern version, it's called backgammon. And basically what you do is you roll dice, two or three, there are countless variations in the book. And thereby you place your pieces inside the board. You roll your dice and move your pieces around to your home board. And finally, you move them out of the board again by rolling dice. And as there are many variants, and this one is called poof. And that's the German word for whorehouse. And actually, when you went to poof, then you went to play the board game. The meaning has shifted slightly. there are many variations in the book. Different kinds of strategies. There's one game, Fallas, where you lose when you can't move anymore. There are variations where, when you can't move your piece, your opponent gets your roll. This speeds up the game. There are variations where when you roll doubles, you in the modern version you can move them twice, but there you use the top sides of the dice and the bottom sides, so that balances it a little bit. And there are even variations in board size. So there's usually you have six places on each side of the board, but there are variations with seven or eight, so you have to have seven or eight-sided dice as well. There are four-player versions. This again is the version of the Four Seasons. It's a little bit like Pachisi, but it has nothing at all to do with that. Now, finally, do we have time? Yeah, maybe a little bit. So I can talk about card games. This is a depiction from the Stuttgart card game. If you ever come to Stuttgart Landesmuseum, you should see these cards. They are beautiful. The picture can't do them justice. They're made with gold, and they depict dogs, ducks, does, and falcons, I think. Yeah. So very, very beautiful card game. This one is actually a late one. I think it's from 1503. And the game you play with that is called Karnüffel. And this is a curious one, because it was around even before the invention of the printing press. You can see that, how it came into Germany or from the southern parts of Europe. I think it came in 1370. It started with the church prohibitions in Basel. And the church quickly disallowed playing this game. Because in this game, the natural order of the world is turned upside down. The devil is higher than the Pope, and the Landsknecht is the highest card you can get. No wonder the church didn't like it. On the other hand, that gave us some opportunity. There was this preacher. He was called Geiler from Kaiserberg, and he damned playing cards. He was very much against it, and by condemning this game, he pretty much explained all the rules. This is good. So now we can still play the game. Also, we found some cards. The first ones printed with wooden blocks was around 1440. So it there must have been something. I mean, when they had in the late 14th century, when they had so many playing cards that the church had to prohibit it, they had to have some means of duplicating cards, and I don't know exactly what it was. But later they used wooden blocks to print them and stencils to color them. And I think this one it was a lucky find, because the City Chronicles of Basel, big book, was wrapped in paper. And this paper happened to be a failed print of playing cards. It was just a huge piece of paper, and they used it to wrap the City Chronicles. So someone unwrapped it, and they found the whole set perfect. The game of Karnüffel is a trick-taking game. It's for four players. They're dealt five cards each, and they play together two and two. It's a very quick game. You can play it in between whatever else you're doing. Okay. The sources, the books I used, and here's an overview of all the games I've been talking about. I recreated all these games I've been talking about today, and I brought them, and you are welcome to try them. I'm going to set it up somewhere downstairs, because I think someone else is going to use this room soon. But you can try all these games. And if you have any questions... I know that was a lot. There was a lot of games in a very short time. The question was, why many of these games have Arabic names? And yeah, that's true. I mean, most of the games I presented today are, I took from the book of Alfonso. And this, the region, Catalan region, it was a melting pot of cultures at the time. So there were Arabs and Jews and all cultures mixed. And the Arabs indeed have a very big influence. So many, many games actually come from the Arabic culture. And I think even chess came from Persia to Arabia and this way to Spain and then Europe. And all the Al-Kirk games. So yeah, that I think that explains why they have Arabic names. Okay. Yeah, they're from the Scandinavian region, yeah. They were also popular in England and Scotland. I think they even found a game board or a description of a game board that was 18 by 18. Oh. Yeah, sorry. The question was if I have any printed rules for the games I brought. And I'm sorry, no. But I will be available and I try to explain the games. Most of them are pretty simple, and maybe once I explained it to people, they can explain to other people coming later. Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably. I didn't know about that rule. But maybe yes. Okay, no more questions. I can tell you some more anecdotes. But I think we're done for now. I'm going to set up some games downstairs. You're welcome to try them. Thank you.